Hey, you're tuned in to the Verve Podcast live from the heart of Las Vegas, Nevada. Thanks for listening, and viva la Verve!
Hey guys, I'm supposed to be with you today. I wish I was with you today, but my wife's father passed away on Friday morning, and so I'm here in North Carolina with the family and preparing for the funeral on Monday. And there's an awesome church here in Raleigh called Life Point, and they were kind enough to let me come in and film my message for you guys. And so that's where I am, and that's what we're going to do. So we're in this series called Hot Mess, and I wonder, have you ever made a mess messier? Back when our first kid, Dawson, was only a couple months old, my wife went out and left me to take care of him. I was new to being a father, but I thought, how hard can this be? I was confident. I was ready. And then Dawson had a blowout. Just to make sure we have a common definition, a blowout is when a baby goes number two with such volume and force that his or her diaper cannot contain it. Dawson had a blowout, and I thought, okay, I can handle this. And so I began cleaning up the mess. Taking off his diaper was relatively easy. The trick was getting his clothes, which had number two on them, over his head. I couldn't do it. I was getting number two on him, on me. The mess was getting messier. And that's when it started to rain, which I found surprising since we were indoors. And that's when I realized that Dawson was going number one and I had not put a new diaper on him. Unprepared for that kind of precipitation, I did what any resourceful young father would do. I cupped my hands and caught the number one. Unfortunately, my hands quickly became full and number one started going wherever number one wanted to go. The mess was getting messier. That's when I called my wife. I said, what do I do? She said, do you need me to come home? I thought, of course I need you to come home. I said, of course I don't need you to come home. I can do this. But how do I clean up this mess without making it messier? Have you ever made a mess messier? Maybe you made a financial mess messier, or a relational mess messier, or maybe an academic mess messier. It's not good. Like, it already was a bad mess. You don't want to get it messier. See, when a mess happens, you have to respond, right? There's a response required. And there are always different options on how you can respond to the mess. And every mess comes with some bad options that will just make the mess messier. Every mess comes with some bad options. Like, you get caught in a lie, lie bigger. Lie your way out of the lie. You're in debt, you can't make payments, borrow more money. You got found out, destroy the evidence. You sent a text you shouldn't have sent, send another text that makes the first text seem like it was just a joke. You've been drinking too much, you don't feel good about yourself anymore, you feel bad about yourself, drink some more and you won't feel bad. When you have a mess, I bet that there are some options that you will consider. They're bad options, and if you choose them, they just make the mess messier. And that's what we're going to talk about today. We're going to learn from a story in the Bible, from the book of 1 Samuel, chapter 24. True story, really happens from history. It happened around 1000 BC, and it's a story about a guy named David. David was one of a bunch of sons of a father named Jesse. And one day, when David was just a boy, he was shepherding the sheep of his dad, Samuel shows up. Samuel was a prophet, which means God would give him a message to share with people. So Samuel shows up, and he anoints little David as the new king of the nation of Israel. Well, there's a problem. Israel already had a king, a grown-up king named Saul. Okay, so now there's two kings. There's the real king, Saul, and little future king, David, who's still tending sheep. A little while later, the Israelites are at war against the Philistines, and David's older brothers are in the army. David's still too young, and so Jacob, the dad, sends David to the battlefront to check on his brothers, bring him some food, and when he gets there, he sees that the enemy of the army, it has this giant of a man named Goliath. Goliath is ridiculing the God of the Israelites. And he's challenging any one of the Israelites to come out and fight him. But no one will fight him. He is way too big. But little David, who just showed up, says, I'll fight him. I can kill him. And he does. And he becomes an overnight sensation. Everyone in Israel is talking about David. Not many are talking about King Saul anymore. When David gets older and Saul ends up putting David in charge of his army. 1 Samuel chapter 18, verse 5. We'll have it here on the screen for you. Or will we? There it is. 1 Samuel 18, verse 5 says, whatever Saul asked David to do, David did it successfully. So Saul made him a commander over the men of war, an appointment that was welcomed by the people and Saul's officers alike. David is very successful as the leader of the army, which leads the Israelites to make a song which David does not appreciate. Says this, Saul, here's the song. Saul, we're going to go back. You can tell I'm not used to using one of these guys. Here we go. So it says, Saul has killed his thousands and David his 10,000s. Doesn't sound like that great of a song to me, but that's a song. It says, this made Saul very angry. What's this? He said, they credit David with the thousands and me with only thousands. Next, they'll be making him their king. So from that time on, Saul kept a jealous eye on David. Saul had the title, but David has become the real leader in the country. Saul realizes he has a problem, but then he gets an idea of how he can control David, marry off one of his daughters to him. If David is his son-in-law, he can control him. So Saul proposes it, and David says, wow, what an honor, but I can't. I'm just not worthy. And everyone hears about it, and they are even more impressed with David. They start saying, David the humble, David the humble. David's popularity keeps increasing, as does Saul's jealousy. Well, later, one of Saul's daughters falls in love with David. Saul again proposes David marrying one of his daughters. Again, David says, no, I'm not worthy. But eventually, he's convinced to say yes. And so he does become Saul's son-in-law. And then Saul has another idea before David becomes his son-in-law. Back then, a man would pay a price for the bride. And look what Saul tells David he wants him to pay for his daughter to be his bride. He says, tell David that all I want for the bride price is 100 Philistine foreskins. Vengeance on my enemies is all I really want. But what Saul had in mind was that David would be killed in the fight. Okay, so Saul says he wants 100 Philistine Saul says he wants David to kill 100 Philistines because he thinks David will be killed, you know, as they go at it, and then David will be gone out of his hair. David says, sure, I'll do it. David and his guys go out and they kill 200 Philistines, which makes things even worse for Saul. Check it out. When Saul realized that the Lord was with David and how much his daughter Michal loved him, Saul became even more afraid of him, and he remained David's enemy for the rest of his life. Every time the commanders of the Philistines attacked, David was more successful against them than all the rest of Saul's officers. So David's name became very famous. And so David is increasing popularity. Saul's increasing in anger and jealousy. David has a mess on his hand. A king who hates him and wants him dead. And the king is his father-in-law. Interestingly, David's mess is not his fault, right? I mean, he didn't ask to be anointed king. When he killed Goliath, he was just serving his country and his God. When he led the military campaigns, he was just doing what he was supposed to do. He refused the king's daughter's hand in marriage. But no matter what he does, things keep getting worse and worse and worse for him. Saul's jealousy keeps growing. Finally, it gets so bad, Saul picks up a spear and tries to kill David. And David realizes, man, he's got to get away. He has to run for his life. Well, David goes out and hides in the desert, but many of the men of the army are so loyal to David that they leave Saul's army and they join David out in the desert. So David is out there. He's got this group of guys with him. And Saul decides that he has to go out, find David, and kill him. So here's what happens next. It is not working. Oh, here we go. It says, after Saul returned from fighting the Philistines, he was told that David had gone into the wilderness of En-Gedi. So Saul chose 3,000 elite troops from all Israel and went to search for David and his men near the rocks of the wild goats. And I've personally been to this area that it's talking about, and it's just, it's rocks and it's hills and it's caves. And Saul is looking for David so he can kill him. And that's when something crazy happens. Oh. At a place where the road passes some sheepfolds, Saul went into a cave to relieve himself. Apparently, he was afraid of having a blowout, I guess. But as it happened, and his men were hiding farther back in that very cave. David and his men were hiding further back in the same cave that he went into. So apparently, it seems one of David's scouts saw Saul, warned David. They go and hide in a cave, and it's in that very cave that Saul chooses to go to the bathroom. What are the odds, right? It seems like a miracle answer to David's problem, which is exactly what David's men thought. They say, now's your opportunity, David's men whispered to him. Today the Lord is telling you, I will certainly put your enemy into your power to do with as you wish. They're like, dude, bro, this is it. This is the day we've been waiting for. Kill Saul. You emerge holding Saul's head. All of Saul's men will pledge their allegiance to you and you will become king. And David, and he kind of gets caught up in the emotion of all this. He's thinking, well, no one would blame me. I mean, he's trying to kill me. If I kill him, it's self-defense. So I want to pause for a minute in the story, okay? Because I want you to think about this. At the heart of almost every mess is a breakdown of virtue. A breakdown of virtue. I've told you that this series was inspired by a pastor named Andy Stanley. That's what he calls it, virtue. What is virtue? Virtue is integrity, honesty, patience, self-control, goodness, doing the right thing. Okay? So what makes a mess? Just about every time it's ignoring virtue. right? Someone acts in a way that's not trustworthy, that's not honest, that lacks self-control, that has no integrity, and it makes a mess. It's simple cause and effect. If you ignore virtue in a relationship or in your finances or in your career or in academically, you will make a mess, okay? The mess is caused by a failure of virtue. I bet if you thought about the different messes you've experienced in life, the mess you're in right now, probably for most of those, maybe even all of those, it was caused by a failure of virtue. And listen, you don't clean up a failure of virtue with another failure of virtue. It just makes sense, right? If you have a flood, you don't clean it up with more water. If you spill paint, you don't clean it up with more paint, right? They say two wrongs don't make a right. Well, two messes don't make an un-mess. That might seem obvious when I say it, but it's usually not obvious when you're in the situation. And again, the problem is that every mess comes with some bad options. The mess was created by a failure of virtue, and there are going to be options on how you can respond to the mess. And some of those options will include another failure of virtue. Many of these failure of virtue options, they look like quick fixes, and we like quick fixes, right? That's what we want. They're quick, and they're fixes. And so we think, yeah, I'll just borrow more money, or I'll just tell another lie. I mean, I think I have to. I'll just cover up the evidence. I'll ask a friend to vouch for me so no one will really know where I was when that happened. With every mess, there are options that include another failure of virtue, but you do not clean up a mess which was caused by a failure of virtue by adding another failure of virtue, which was exactly what David was about to do. His men tell him to sneak up and to kill Saul. He starts to move towards him. Remember, David is a warrior, right? From that day with Goliath all the way through, he's been leading an army. He is now in his sweet spot. He knows how to sneak up. And all Saul is going to notice is a yank on the back of his hair. And like that will be it for him. That will be the last thing he ever feels. David can do this. And he's about to. And then something occurs to him. I am about to make the mess messier. I mean, it feels like a quick fix, but if I murder the king, that is going to be my story forever. See, what makes his situation tricky and what often messes us up, trips us up, is that, well, it would have been justifiable for David to kill the king, right? Everyone would have said, yeah, it was the right thing to do. Everyone would have expected him to do it, agreed with him if he did do it. Absolutely. But did that make it the virtuous thing to do? Absolutely not. David was about to add to his story something I think he would have been embarrassed of for the rest of his life, right? Like years later, Granddad David, tell us how you became king. Well, your great-grandfather was taking a, whatever they called it back in 1000 BC, and while he was there, like right in the middle of, man, David was about to make a decision that he would regret for the rest of his life, even though it was justified, even though it was what everyone was expected, even though it was arguably what Saul deserved. He is about to try to clean up a mess caused by a failure of virtue, Saul's failure of virtue, with another failure of virtue. But you don't clean up a failure of virtue with another failure of virtue. It doesn't clean up the mess. It just makes the mess messier. And David realizes that. Let's look at what happens next. So David crept forward and cut off a piece of the hem of Saul's robe. But then David's conscience began bothering him because he had cut Saul's robe. He said to his men, "The Lord forbid that I should do this to my lord, the king. I shouldn't attack the Lord's anointed one, for the Lord himself has chosen him." So David restrained his men and did not let them kill Saul. David's like, "I almost forgot. God put Saul in that place. And it's not my responsibility to replace what God has put in place. And I don't want to become king by murdering the king." Apparently, David's men don't feel the same way. They're like, "Well, then we'll do it. Like, we have no problem killing the king." But David won't let them. He stops them. What happens next is so cool. So remember, Saul has 3,000 of his best soldiers with him, right? They're all waiting for the big guy to come back from doing whatever they called it back then in 1000 BC. And it's probably hot. They're in the desert. They're waiting. And then finally, here comes Saul. He's buckling up his pants. And he comes out and he rejoins them. And they're all about to leave when David appears in the mouth of the same cave that Saul just came out of. And he's like, "Yoo-hoo!" Look at the next verse. It says, David came out and shouted after him, "My Lord, the king!" And when Saul looked around, David bowed low before him. Saul's like, "Is that who I think it is?" "Yep, that's your son-in-law, David." And everyone in Saul's army immediately knew what had just not happened in that cave. And then David gives a speech. It's an amazing speech. Here's just a part of it. It's kind of long. David says, "Why do you listen to the people who say I am trying to harm you? This very day you can see with your own eyes it isn't true. For the Lord placed you at my mercy back there in the cave. Some of my men told me to kill you, but I spared you. For I said, I will never harm the king. He is the Lord's anointed one. Look, my father, at what I have in my hand. It is a piece of the hem of your robe. I cut it off, but I didn't kill you. This proves that I am not trying to harm you and that I have not sinned against you, even though you have been hunting for me to kill me. May the Lord judge between us. Perhaps the Lord will punish you for what you are trying to do to me, but I will never harm you." Essentially, what David said was, "I am choosing virtue. Even though you've done wrong to me, I am going to do what's right." And what can Saul do, right? He's completely humiliated. His bodyguard is humiliated. His soldiers are in awe of David. They have never seen anything like this. Saul realizes, his soldiers may just declare David king. I mean, what he just did was unheard of. And so Saul calls out to David, "You are a better man than I am, for you have repaid me good for evil. Yes, you have been amazingly kind to me today, for when the Lord put me in a place where you could have killed me, you didn't do it. Who else would let his enemy get away when he had him in his power? May the Lord reward you well for the kindness you have shown me today." And seven chapters later in the Bible, a random Philistine arrow pierces Saul's armor and he dies. And David becomes the rightful king of Israel. So, again, every mess that you and I experience comes prepackaged with a set of bad options. And if you choose a bad option, it will make the mess messier. Think of it this way. Your life is a story, right? You are writing the story. Every story has a mess. And if you have a mess in your past, or maybe you have a mess today, that's normal. Don't freak out about that. What's critical is how you respond to the mess, because your response to the mess becomes a permanent part of the story of your life. Think about that. Your response to the mess becomes a permanent part of the story of your life. And so the question you need to ask yourself is, what story do I want to tell? Right? This is my one and only life. What story do I want to tell? When David was creeping up to Saul, it dawned on him, wait, what story do I want to tell? Like in the future, when people hear how you went through a divorce, what story do you want them to tell about how you went through it? Or when people learn that you had to go through bankruptcy, what story do you want to tell about the options you chose coming out of bankruptcy? Sure, yeah, you dropped out of school, but what did you do as a result? What story do you want to tell? Yeah, you got caught, but then what was your response? What option did you choose? Because your response to the mess becomes a permanent part of your story. So, what option will you choose? What option will you choose? The right answer is the virtuous option. It doesn't look like a quick fix. It probably looks difficult and challenging, but it's the right option, the virtuous option. Like, I finally told her the truth. I turned myself in. I asked exactly what I owed, and I told them that even if it took the rest of my life, I would repay every dollar. I went to the dean, and I apologized for what I did, and I told them I would do whatever I had to do to make it right. We decided that we just had to cut up our credit cards. Listen, the option you choose will become a permanent part of your story. So don't choose an option that makes you a liar or a hypocrite for life. It's always tempting. When we're in a mess, we always want to look for the quick fix, right? Like, I think if I just tell one more lie, I can get myself out of this mess. Or if we just take one more loan, we can finally get out of this financial disaster. And yeah, maybe someone hurt you and what you want is eye for an eye, but don't do it. Follow the example of David. Granddad, tell us how you became king. Well, your great-grandfather was taking whatever they called it back in 1000 BC. I mean, he was like right in the middle of it. And I did what no one else would have done. I could have killed him, but I chose virtue. And I want that, right? You want that because your life is a story. You are writing the story. Every story has a mess. What's critical is how you respond to the mess, because your response to the mess becomes a permanent part of your life story. So, choose virtue. Do what's right, even if it's hard. That's how you address the mess. And it is hard, so let's pray for that together. Let's pray. God, I'm going to be doing my father-in-law's funeral on Monday. And I've already been kind of working on it and writing it out, and I'm going to tell his life story. We don't tend to think about this much, and we don't really like to, but the truth is each and every one of us is going to have a funeral one day, and someone is going to tell our life story. And there's going to be a truth about our life story. And God, all of our stories have some messes. We all make some mistakes, and we have things happen, and we all have messes. What's really important is how we respond to the mess. So God, would you help us when we have those options to choose virtue, to choose the option that is right, that has integrity, that is kind, that is patient. Help us, God, to choose the right thing, even if it's difficult, so we don't make our mess messier. God, thank you for being a God who wants to come alongside of us and help us through our mess. Help us to make those right choices and to lead us out of our mess into a less messy life. Thanks for sending Jesus to rescue us from our mess. And we pray all these things in his name. Amen. That's it.